Welcome to the Overly Rich Anonymous 50th birthday party. My name is Corey, and I'm your moderator for this panel. Hello. Will everyone who cares to please join me in the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, the title of this panel is, It Really Is One Day at a Time. All of the panel topics this weekend are taken from For Today, the Daily Reader, first published by Overeaters Anonymous in 1982. The panel's topic comes from July 28th. That is the happiest conversation where there is no competition, no vanity, but a calm, quiet interchange of sentiments. Samuel Johnson. How good it feels to be with OA people, whether in a meeting, at a coffee shop gathering, or on the telephone. The talk is a quiet sharing, unlike the conversations we know on the outside. We discuss endlessly what the illness is like and what the program has done and is doing for us. If we participate long enough, we hear our story, or at the very least, find something with which we can strongly identify. Even the most competitive people eventually find that there is no need to impress anyone, to prove that they are better than anyone else. The principles of the program, embodied in the steps and traditions, make Overeaters Anonymous a community of loving, caring people whose only goal is freedom from compulsive overeating for themselves and others. For today, the company of OA is a precious gift, available to me at any time I want it. We have three speakers on this panel. As they are sharing, we will pass an basket around the room. Please be sure to keep it moving even if you have already passed it. As speakers continue to share, members may think of questions they did not have when the basket passed the first time. Our first speaker is Laura, who will speak for 15 minutes.
Hi, I'm Laura, a compulsive overeater. Such an honor. Karen asked me to speak, and this was sort of the only time slot I could fit in. And when she told me the topic was the community of OA, I was like, wow, that's really great, because something I've really grown into is appreciating and enjoying the community of OA. I came into OA. Your timing, right? Okay. I came into OA when I was 35 years old, and I had lived my life in rebellion against what I perceived to be my parents' insistence that if I was overweight, I would never get married. I would never be an actress, which is what I wanted to be at the time. I would never this, that, and the other thing. And that was burned and scarred into my body, that message. And so I was very solitary in the sense of, well, I'll show you, you know. And I had friends, and I had, you know, I actually had a real life. I was married. I had a job, you know. But I was alone. And I was like, you know, with my food. My food was my community. And there was nothing that I could not solve by feeling better by planning to eat and starting to eat. And then, of course, you know, it was backfiring and it wasn't really working. But I continued. The persistence of the illusion was astonishing, because I continued to try to get it to work well beyond when it did. And so I came. I sort of my first sense of community was I went to my doctor, who is just a wonderful, sensitive man, and he suggested that I said, oh, all right, I'll lose weight. And he said, well, why don't you just take better care of yourself? And that was like, those were the magic words, you know. He didn't scold me for whatever, and I got to make a decision. Oh, okay, maybe I'll take better care of myself. And I had seen My Name is Bill W. on TV some months before that, and was very moved by the community that was AA. I knew AA worked for alcoholics, so I came to my first OA meeting really I just wanted to stop eating. I couldn't. Because I tried and I couldn't. And I was desperate to stop. I just needed to find something. And so the sense of community that I found in my first OA meeting was magical. There were people that were talking about food and the way that I experienced it. I never knew. This was in 1989. And I never knew that there were other people who did what I did with food and felt the way I did about myself and felt the way I did about food. And because, you know, all I knew was, you know, I remember reading, when I was a teenager, I wasn't a teenager at that point, but reading 17 magazine, that was my Bible. And, you know, you can be, you know, you'll get this, this, and this if you're this, this, and this. And there was this bathing suit that I wanted to look good in or fit in, and, you know, that was sort of my reward. That was all I knew. And here were all these people that were just like me, and I just felt like I am home. And that was August 17th, 1989 was my first meeting. I don't remember dates really well anymore, but I'll always remember that. And then about a week and a half later, you know, based on the fact that I had, you know, I had found other people who were just like me, I guess I had started reading the Big Book, but maybe not. Maybe all I heard was steps. Maybe all I heard was, you know, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable, and then they said, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, and made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. I felt really included in that, because I loved the panel that was just before, if anybody heard that. Those guys were awesome. We're talking about, you know, the community of God, you know, with them and themselves, and they were saying, or, you know, I guess my experience on that was that I had always believed in God, but I felt like my God, you know, I never thought God was punishing me. I just thought God wasn't interested in me unless I was eating properly. And once I was eating properly, I was worthy of going to God. But, you know, I didn't know until I went to my first meeting and heard the second step and the third step, you know, I could have that. That's open to me. And you guys told me that. And so about a week and a half later, August 26, 1989, I turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him at the time, and I started abstaining from eating between meals and from certain foods and from certain kinds of ways of eating. That's, you know, a lot of it's, there's more now that I abstain from than I abstain from then, but so that was 20 years ago and some months, so I've been abstinent for that long. And I was, just as an aside, I weighed close to 250 pounds when I came into OA, and I don't today. You know, getting a sponsor was also part of the OA community for me, you know, having another person who I would talk to and be honest with was not my natural way. It was not something I wanted to do, and but I tried it because that's what I was supposed to do. Does that mean I have 3 minutes left? Okay, well I better hurry up and skip on. My first large sense of the OA community was when I was, I guess it was 90 days abstinent. I went to the Thanksgiving meeting in the park, and I was blown away because there was this huge, huge group of people who were just like me, you know. And at the end of the meeting, I remember we all got in this huge circle, and it was enormous. And I felt this sense of connection to people that was just so magical. Over the years, you know, I kind of slowly just continued to keep my OA circle pretty small, my community very small, And I have continued to abstain. I worked the steps. I had a lot of emotional and spiritual recovery. I had some substantial physical recovery, but probably around age 10 or so, I started to kind of, I didn't really notice it, but my weight was going up, and I was abstaining still, but my meals were larger, and I wasn't exercising, and it was showing on me physically. And a couple of years after that, I finally decided that I wanted to have intimacy with my OA community. And I didn't have that I had a series of sponsors that, after my first sponsor moved out of town, that were very, not intimacy. Like, when I would call, they wouldn't be there and I'd be happy. You know, that was my sense of having a sponsor and doing my step work. So, I found the sponsor that I have today at age 12, and everything got better. And at first, I just talked to her, and then she said, you have to find a community, you have to find people in OA. And at age 12, I started to do that. She said, make calls. Thank you, Corey. She said, make calls, and I was like, how? You know, I was 12 in OA. I probably should have known that, but I didn't. And so all I did was she told me to just call and say, I'm practicing making calls. And today, so 8 years later after that, today I have a personal OA community in my life. And when I go away on vacations, I use that community. I do not leave my program at home. I take my community with me. I commit to making a call a day, at least, you know, aside from the calls I make to my sponsor. And it keeps me connected to myself. And being at this birthday party has been, you know, like an explosion of community. I'm so happy to see you and you know, people that I don't see very often. It's like, this has been a, did you hold up the sign yet? Thank you. Okay. So, that's my experience with the OA community. I'm extremely grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks for keeping the baskets going around. After the next speaker, I'm going to ask you to pass them up. So if you have any questions, think about them now and get them down in the next 15 minutes. And our next speaker is Roz.
Hi, everybody. My name is Roz. I am such a grateful, compulsive overeater. And thank you for asking me to speak today. It's a pleasure and an honor. I just get to figure this out of the way, okay? I came in here on May 26, 1987, weighing 390 pounds and being broken in a million pieces. And three doctors told me and my family I had 6 months to live. I had a heart attack, liver disease, diabetes with 700, high blood pressure. I had a heart attack 10 years before I got here. I had angina, could not hardly walk, and I was mentally and spiritually absolutely dead. And so I walked into Overeaters Anonymous being helpless, and I had tried to kill myself 2 times. And I never really thought this would work for me. And here I am standing here 22 and a half years later saying, and it wasn't me, it was God. And I never believed in God. When I got here, I remember once walking out of Beverly Hills High School because I couldn't fit in the desks and thinking that, oh, they all hate me. And because I hated myself. I despised myself. I never thought I was a human being. And that's what I was fed in my head. And my sponsor, Natalie, taught me the word fuck. And so I had to take the thing of my tape of K-fuck out of my head and put in K-joy. And that's what I have in my head today. Because of what you guys, this community gave me, and because of working the steps and the big and helping others and doing a lot of service, and that is what I do today, no matter what my life is about today. And a lot of grieving, and a lot of writing, and a lot of tools. And there's like four people in this room today that saw me when I came in that know me intimately and know what I've walked through. And now today I'm 74, and last night you should have seen me dancing. And I had fun. And here in this, today it says, we discuss endlessly what the illness is like and what the program has done for us. Well, I was dying, you know, and I've gone through two major accidents where I almost died. I just had breast surgery, two kinds of breast surgery in October, and it was benign. So I walked through a lot with a husband that's very sick, and things were really, I think I was going to live 2 years ago. I was in a coma in a terrible accident. And it was an OA, God's blood of all of you, that restored me to help. Visiting me in a home, and I had to go to a home for physical therapy. Please, God, don't ever let me go to that home again. And it was people that came to care me at night, day over, brought food. That's what you get. By giving, just unconditionally, you get back more from God. Today, my life centers around filling myself with God. People keep coming to me this weekend and saying, you look so good, you're just glowing, you look fabulous. I'm just the same person, but somehow in the last 9 months to a year, I've changed completely. I'm taking time for myself. I'm meditating more. I'm praying more. I've cut back. I just turn more and more to God and His community that's been here for me all these years, that I'm learning now how to take care of me for the first time, because I don't have the energy I had. And well, honest, it's like I had a sponsor that I loved for 17 and a half years. And she got sick last year, and I missed her terribly, but she taught me so much that I have everything she said in my head. And the sponsor before her, who knew Becky, I still talk to her. So everything I've learned, it's in my head. I learned to listen. I learned how to eat. Food does not call me in. It's a miracle. It doesn't. And if it does, I write those letters for my disease, FatFat Roslyn, I'm getting you back. And I really write a lot. And I practice the principles in all my affairs. But it is about the community. I never do phone calls the first year or 2 years. Today I do. I call long-timers. They walk before me. They held my hand out to me. I wouldn't be standing here today. I was shut down. Those people held their hand out to me when I hated myself and got me going. They picked me up. They brought me books. They called me. They talked to me. When I found out what happened to me in my childhood, there were people there. And six people I know have died. One of them was the secretary of my first meeting. I loved her to pieces, and she went out and had a heart attack and stroke in her 40s. And you know what? I put her on a pedestal. There are no pedestals. There's no people better than, and there's no people less than. We're all the same in this world. All the same. It's like I used to think I was the most less than person. But now I realize today there's no people better than. There's no people less than. We're all in this world. It's complete happiness and joy. And I get to go through the giant turmoil. It's like being in an ocean, you know, like just on a life raft. And as long as I hold on to God, my higher power, I'm okay. And it's like a lot of breathing in faith and breathing out anxieties and breathing in faith and breathing out anxieties. I don't know everything. I keep learning every day. My biggest thing was in the beginning was, I know. Every time I said that, everyone would say, don't know. It took me like years to stop that word, I know. you know, because I seriously don't know. I don't. You know, if someone calls me about dating, how do I know? I haven't dated for 57 years. It's like, okay, you better call someone younger to say, I'm not about to date. You know, and no matter how sick my husband is and the hospital's in and out and everything that's going on, I'm there for him. I love him. I'm there for him. And I'm his advocate. You know, I'm powerless over the outcome. All I can do is be there, love him, and be there for him. He is so happy I'm here this weekend. He is so happy. It's unbelievable. I have an incredible daughter and granddaughters that adore me. I have a son that doesn't talk to me. And you know what? That's okay. I still love him. You know? I have everything that God gives to me. It's not everything I wanted, but it's everything I need. And that is the most miracle part of my life. And I never would have thought that this could happen to me. This broken woman at 51 years old who tried to kill herself 2 times, but I couldn't stop eating. This is a disease that kills you, and it sure killed me. God just gave me a chance and gave me his hand out, but I couldn't have done it without all of you that held your hand out to me. This is a community of unconditional love. But if I wouldn't have listened, if I wouldn't have taken your hand, I would be dead. My granddaughter would not know her grandmother. When I first showed her my picture of me at 390,000, they go, well, who thought that woman was that one, Grandpa? I have to say that. They just couldn't believe me until they got older. And so, you know what? I was able to take care of them part-time for 10 years from the time they were born. Now they're only a year older. But they love to come with me. That is a miracle. A miracle that I was able to go with them to all the little physical activities, get on the floor. It's just like a miracle. Everything in my life to me is a miracle. A miracle that I don't have to go to that poison anymore. A miracle that I don't live in that deep, black darkness of hell. That's where I lived. Like quicksand, I couldn't get out. I couldn't. Every diet, every time I lost weight, I gained it back. I couldn't. I was like a family laughing stock. You know, now it's like God has opened the gates of heaven for me. I hope to God I never have to go back there. As long as I practice the principle of the program, do these steps, do service, help others, and believe in a higher power, and don't go into food, I'm okay. I am okay. And I'm okay inside myself. I have to really work hard on my insides and believe and have courage to keep going no matter what. No matter what life gives me, I can do. There's a thing that was like, no matter what dealt you, what kind of deck of cards, you can take that deck of cards and make it into something beautiful. You know, and it doesn't matter how hard my feelings are, I'll never die from the feelings, but I will die from compulsive overeating. And I've been through big amounts of feelings, I can tell you right now. And what a miracle it is that we can be together this weekend. I've seen people from my first 6 months a year today for the first time in 20 years. I just love it. I love seeing all these people that I grew with. When I got here, I was like an 8-year-old, and now I'm maybe 30 years old, not 74. And I love all of you so much, and thank you for being here for me and special people that held my hand when I got here. And I'm not going to mention names. I don't want to do that to you, but my heart is filled. My heart is filled. And to Natalie, who's not here today, she taught me so much. That woman, that lady, my love, taught me. She taught me about love, giving love, and she taught me about God. It wasn't until she was my sponsor I really got to believe. She taught me that word, believe. That's what this book says right here, believe. So I never really believed until Natalie, God bless her, taught me that word. So I say to you today, believe. Believe in this community. Give it to the community. And this community really gives to you. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Roz. I know there's one basket here. Can we pass the other basket back up? And the third speaker is Victor.
Good morning. I'm Victor, compulsive reader. And once again, just to mention a few facts, I'm grateful that 19 years ago yesterday, I came into my first OA meeting after having been 10 years in another 12-step program. And I'm grateful to say one day at a time that I've been absent for those 19 years. Thank you. And when I say that, I also say something that I've heard somebody say many years ago, and it's important for me to repeat this as well, too, that truly the world record for abstinence is only 24 hours. You know, I'm no different than anybody else that's in this room. I'm grateful that I can be a worker among workers today and not have to worry about, you know, running around and tooting my own ID, my ego, rather, I should say. A little bit of other background, too. I was born late in life to a mother and father. My dad was actually born in 1907. My mother born in 1912. He came from a family of eight, from a dirt poor family. And my mother came from a family of 13. And these are children, not including the parents. And I was the only one they had. Either they learned their lesson from having too many kids around, or actually, as it really turned out, I was the only one that they could have. So I grew up as an only child. I learned how to play by myself, the pots and pans and hammers. I remember at a time my parents used to tell me they tried to buy me a rubber hammer and I'd have nothing to do with it because I wanted a real one. But they, at some point in my life, I think when I was about 6 years old, felt that I should be brought up in a family atmosphere and started bringing in foster children, foster boys. And I learned early on how to resent other people. Because I had no idea why they were doing this to me. Is it something I did? Was I being punished for something that I had done wrong years ago? And the reality is that's followed me through my life. My mother, God rest her soul, was the person who introduced me to how to compulsively overeat. And one of the things I've come to understand and be grateful for is that to forgive her for that, because I can now see how much pain she must have gone through. And there was no such thing as Overeaters Anonymous during her period of time. And so I'm tremendously grateful for the fact that the people that have gone before me have created a community where I can be part of other people. I can learn how to have brothers and sisters. And to be able to understand what my higher power really means for me. And for a moment, and this is strictly my opinion. If there was actually no existence of a being called God, or whatever it is you wish to call him, the manifestation of the God in my life would be manifested in all of these rooms that I go to. Through the wisdom, the collective experience, all of the things that have taken place in all of your lives throughout the years that helped me in one form or another, whether it was somebody that came before me, whether it was somebody that happened to be in the first rooms that I happened to be in, or whether this is maybe even your first meeting that you're at right now, everything that you do, all of that collective wisdom is certainly, most assuredly, a power greater than ourselves. And I know it's a power greater than I am. If we broke out in a fist fight now and I was the only one on my side, you'd beat the crap out of me, so at least I know that. There is no place in the world that I can go where I can cry and blubber and let all the snot run down my nose and do what I need to do in front of other people that I can do. There's no other place that I can do it other than here, and knowing that whether you judge me or not, you're certainly going to give me support as a group. I've learned that it's important to be part of the whole, because as I sit and I try and walk through my life by myself and do things by myself, all that best thinking, as I'm sure many of you heard before and I've heard from other people before, all of my best thinking got me to the doors of OA, because I didn't know how to make choices. I learned how to exist in my own head. And even to this day, there are moments where that little voice that comes back to me and says, even how wonderful my life may be at any given time, yes, but this is going to happen to you tomorrow. Or this might happen in the next second. This might happen next week. You might be the one person in 2,000 years that gets killed by a meteorite. And you know something? I don't know about you, but 95% of the horrible and terrible things that I felt throughout my lifetime have never occurred. It's all been things that have happened in my own mind. And in this last year, and I don't think there's probably too many people, if any of them in this room, that haven't been touched by the economy. I'm not going to go into all the detail, but my income has probably been reduced by at least 60-65% during the last 12 months. And I can say with a great deal of gratitude that I would have gone out and eaten and kept eating. And even though I started feeling better when I'd eaten, I would eat till I would hurt. And once I'd hurt, I would eat more to try and make it feel better, which would only cause me to hurt more. And somewhere along the line, somebody came to me and said, you don't have to do that to yourself if you don't want to. You don't have to punish yourself if you really don't want to do that. You have choices that you can make in life. And so I can pick up a phone. I can pick up a directory. I'm grateful to say, because of my travel for business, whether it happens to be in Baltimore or St. Louis or Portland, Oregon, or any place throughout the United States, all I have to do is I just have to pick up a directory. I can call OA. I can look online. And sometimes if I show up and there's only two other people at the meeting, or as I've been before, I and another person in the meeting, that's what I need. It's my connection with that community of OA. And one of the things I discovered was is that because of my schedule when I work sometimes, is that I can also even pick up a phone and call into meetings. And I've been in meetings where that community of OA extends beyond Los Angeles, extends beyond California and the United States. And there have been people on those phone calls that have been from Sweden or Korea. And I really am at that particular point grounded and reminded how grateful I am that all of these people have gone to all this trouble just for me. And if you are new in OA, and it's something that you don't really grasp what the concepts are, I had somebody who walked up to me, it doesn't really matter who the person was, and only been in, well, I was at the literature table a little bit earlier, who'd only been in the program for about a month. And I reminded them that we're all people and human beings in this meeting. There is a lot to learn, but the reality is I go back to abstinence being, 24 hours is truly the only record that we have to worry about in this. And I don't have to worry about anymore if I don't want to. And sometimes it's a minute, sometimes it's a second, sometimes it's an hour that's difficult to get through. And if I break it down to what's happening to me at this particular moment, the reality here as I am here with you right now is I am fine. I'm not eating compulsively. I'm still alive. I am in reasonable health, except for the things that age do a little bit to all of us. And I'm very, very grateful that because without this community, without the wisdom that has gone before, without the people that have pioneered and done all the things that they need to, they've allowed people like me who are still youngsters at 19 years old and in OA to be able to exist one day at a time. And that's all really I have to do. And so at some time at the end of this meeting, we're going to put our hands in with each other, and it's going to be a reminder that we are part of a community that is greater than ourselves and part of a power that is certainly truly greater than ourselves. Because I know one thing for certain. I know what my best thinking did, and it got me here. And without you, I'd be out there hurting myself right now or possibly even be dead. And I thank you for coming today and helping support me in my program. Thank you.
Thanks, Victor. Okay, so I got the basket, and some questions were similar, so I did some grouping. Because that's who I am. So the three questions are pretty similar, and I'll read them all and we'll lump them together, and anyone who wants to can respond to these. How do you overcome the fear and let people in? How do you begin to make friends in OA? And how do you practice it and build intimacy with Overeaters Anonymous Fellowship?
Yeah, whoever wants to.
Hi, I'm still Rod. How do you let the fear, how do you let people in? It took me a long time to overcome the fear and let people in. So it started for me just by having a sponsor, which took me 4 months to have. I wouldn't recommend that at all. I was waiting for the right person. And then, slowly by slowly, by going to certain meetings, like the 100-pounder meeting in Westchester, it was impossible not to let people in, because that meeting is filled with nothing but unconditional love. And to this day, those certain people in that meeting are still my really good friends. So when people are loving you, my walls went down. My walls went down. And I let them in. You know, it was... Okay, that's it? Oh. I get it, you. Of course, then I met him at Santa Monica meeting, and it's possible to not love him. And then I met somebody right here, my 30-day trip, who called me and said, I want to meet you on a Wednesday night. I thought, well, how do I know who you are? She said, I know who you are. So it's impossible. When people come out to you, it's impossible not to let them in, and that's how I let people in. And now my walls are down. Actually, I still know now who to let in and who not to. I've learned that this year. Thank you.
Okay, Corey gave me this question. How do you maintain your spiritual condition? I would say the tools are the steps. Working the steps is the basic answer to that question. But since, you know, working the steps is a process, on a daily basis, I use as many of the tools as I possibly can. And I start my day out with a brief connection with my inner self and with God. And then when I get up, I do the seventh, I say the third step and the seventh step. And then among my other morning activities, I read 4 pages out of some book, one of which is always the big book, but they rotate, and just more, you know, reading. And then I have it's a morning meditation. I call it a morning meditation, but I do it sort of later in the day. And as part of that, I just connect with God. I have my own little script. And one of the most important parts of that is I try to do it after dinner, right after dinner. I make my food plan for the next day. And I call my sponsor every day, leave her a message, and then I also talk to her once a week. I go to meetings, and as I was saying earlier, you know, when I feel myself sort of slipping away from myself, unconnected, and that can happen in a morning, you know, that's not weeks, that's very quickly. You know, I just put it on my list of things to do today, to make an OA call. I'll list up even a person. I'll have someone in mind, or maybe 10 people that I want to connect with during the week. And just, so it's just one call, and just call and say, hey, I'm just checking in. And I have a commitment to myself to write for 40 minutes every week, because what I was talking about when I was around 10 or 11, that period is when I was really not doing any of this stuff. And that's why my food was getting bigger, and that's why I was not physically, you know, I was gaining weight. And so I have this routine. It's like an exercise routine, and I do exercise too. I have a very specific exercise commitment every week now. It's the same thing. It's spiritual exercise, and it's consistent, and it doesn't change depending on how busy I am. It has to come first. And unless I do these things, then my meals do get bigger. And I start to separate from myself. And then, you know, then where's God in that? And God isn't, it's harder for me to connect. God's there, but I'm stepping away. So this is my maintenance program, you know, and having the food plan, of course, is part of that.
Victor, and yeah, I'm still a compulsive overeater. But that's how I kind of look up and it's like, you know, hey, God, how about just, you know, for another... Anyway, I don't. I just keep coming back. What is your experience with OA Worldwide? Do you feel a connection, if I understood the question correctly? And I will go back to what I mentioned earlier, is that the answer is that it is a little bit limited. I wish I could say I was a world traveler and been to all the spots in the world. There's a lot of places I would still like to go. I have experienced OA with people, once again, on the telephone, as I mentioned earlier, people from different countries. I have actually been at a meeting down in the Yucatan Peninsula. I have been on meetings on a cruise ship. And the thing that is really interesting is that no matter what language anybody speaks verbally, if everybody is connected through the 12 steps, they understand what you're saying. And in fact, in many ways, as you may have found yourself too, is that a lot of the communication that we have is on a spiritual level that is really almost nonverbal at times. So I do feel a connection to that. And it's not to really step out of OA too much, but just to simply say that's the connection I feel with people throughout the world anyway, because when it really gets down to it, they take a shower if they have the capability to do that in the morning. They have breakfast, they brush their teeth if they have a capability to do that. Some of our fellow human beings are really challenged with those basics right now, but we go through all the exact same things. We get up in the morning, we go through a routine, we do what we need to do to put food on the table, to take care of having a place to eat, all the people in our lives. And so it extends actually beyond OA, and I'm grateful for that as well, too. Because when I was younger, it was... This is an odd way to put this, but it was more of an intellectual exercise to like people. And as I've gotten older, especially in the program, it's nice to be able to enjoy people on an emotional level and a spiritual level as well, too. Was there a length of time you didn't have OA community available to you face-to-face, but you were able to feel totally connected and fed? And I'll take that in a spiritual way. Once again, I go back to what I said earlier. Yes, there have been times where I've not been able to really talk to people face-to-face, but I've been able to. There are, if you go on to the World Service site, there are telephone meetings and online meetings. If you haven't done that, I would highly recommend it, because you do get to talk to people in other parts of the country and deal with them as well, too. And because of my schedule, sometimes I travel, and sometimes even if I'm here locally, every once in a blue moon, there are periods where I may go for, I may work, you know, 20 hours or 24 hours straight in a row because of what I do. And I really just honestly don't really have much of a chance to, but I'm grateful once again that the literature is always there to provide a connection if I'm not able to pick up the phone, or if I'm not able to get to a meeting, or if I'm not able to go online with somebody. That literature always keeps me spiritually fed. And that's one of the things that I try and do on a daily basis. You know, it's a short-term battery. I can store it up in the morning with the prayers and things that I do during the day, but it's not going to last me for days and weeks on end. But there have been moments where it's been some days where I've had to go periods of time without connection, and I can always get back to the literature, and that's something I can always, you know, carry with me. Since we have computers, we can get those things online very readily. And when I was a newcomer, I guess, what did you have to do, most especially to keeping hearing newcomers? It's easy to get jaded in anything. It's easy to sit back and think, well, I've got it done, I've got it knocked, I've been doing this X number of years, and I don't have to really worry about doing that. And when I hear a newcomer, and I hear the pain in their voice, and I can see it in their eyes, it's a reminder of how I was when I first came into the program. And I'm truly, truly grateful that... people will continue to share that with me and allow me to share my feelings and what it was like when I was a newcomer as well, too. So thank you for letting me share.
again. Okay. Can you share more about how it felt to experience real life and living with a higher power? Yep, that's really easy. Because I didn't have what I have today years ago inside of me. I didn't have the closeness I have today with my higher power, when I choose to call God. I didn't have it. Because every time I would take myself way back, because I didn't have the same trust in me that I have today. So the more experience that I have with life, the more sadness and the more life happenings, the more I have to turn to God, the more I knew I had to turn to God, which I really learned a lot from my sponsor. There was no way I could control it, as it says in the big book on acceptance, the higher I place my expectations or where my surrender went. And I had to look at things in a whole new way, because there's nothing I couldn't control. The financial problems, I couldn't control my husband's health, I couldn't control anything. And so, the more and more that I looked at life in a whole different perspective, I realized finally at the bottom that I had to let God come in full time. And that's when all of a sudden this glow happened inside of me, and I had to realize that, you know, God, all along you've been with me, taking me through my mother's death, losing our business, moving to a girl, moving out of Orange County, which I never wanted to, and all of it, it was a purpose, and a lot of fear. Well, I moved here when I was 9.5 years absent, and I got my recovery here in L.A., but I knew there had to be a purpose eventually. So God's when God really came into my life, when I had to trust there was a purpose here in Orange County. And all these real life happenings, you know, there's a lot of personal stuff. And I don't want it to be taped with a member of my family not talking to me and my husband. And there's a lot of joy and happiness way over the other things. And that's what I look at today. God has provided me with a life beyond my wildest dreams. And a lot of sadness, but you know, I have the tools. I have the phone. I have my writing. I have the steps. And I'm working with others. When you're working with others, you don't even think about yourself. And I don't think about myself 95% of the time. And that's where God comes in to fill me up. I just take deep breaths and let him just fill me up. And I learned that from two very wonderful sponsors that I had. And it just works. It works. I have so much calmness today and serenity running along the other things. Because first, I have to fill myself up. And that's what I learned here. I learned it from many people, and a few people sitting here today that have much more years than me. It's not the years of him, it's what I'm learning every day. And what a life it could be. And I don't know, one day at a time, one moment at a time, I feel surrounded by that love of God and the angels that he sends into my life. But I don't want to leave this weekend and go back to reality. I love being this girl. I used to live that way in fantasy land. So I don't live in Tomorrowland either, because I don't want to do that. But I certainly don't want to leave all this, but I'm taking you home with me. Thank you.
Okay, here's another question. As a member of more than one program, I find that OA has the least community. Perhaps just my experience, but certainly true. Any thoughts, any ideas about whether if I reach out more, there will be more? Anybody?
That's tailor-made for me. After I was abstinent 16 years, my sponsor sent me to another program. And I found in that other program a wonderful complement to what I do here, but OA is my primary program. But that program has a community, and a huge community, and I was, once I started working that program, that became part of how I worked that program. And I agree. I didn't find that here in OA. But it wasn't until I just sort of changed my perspective and I just started making that my community in a different way. I mean, I didn't mention this in my first share because I didn't feel it was appropriate to talk about another program. But really, that the lessons that I learned there and I brought back into OA just made my OA community flower even more. And even coming to this birthday party for me was or even like a couple of years ago, I was in the OA play. I mean, I never would have done that, like, you know, pre my other program. But I wanted, I found that there. It's so rewarding, and I wanted more of that here. So I started building it myself, and I reach out. I mean, the way that I do that in this program, again, is reaching out to newcomers and making calls to people I don't know but that I've heard speak at a meeting or just, you know, going to lunch with people. I mean, going to lunch with OA friends. I never used to do that. I perhaps am unusual in that. I mean, I don't think it's that uncommon to do that. But kind of the, and finding, and this is another kind of funny thing, but it's like I know people in these rooms that I don't know their last name, and I've known them for years. But now I'm sort of trying to find, like, know them in the world, not to break anonymity, but just to know them more as part of my life. And now when my husband and I have Christmas or our barbecue every year, those are sort of our two main events, I invite program people because I'm not afraid to, you know, show who I am in, you know, the real world to them. So I definitely have learned from another program to bring that into OA, and that's how I work on building that community in OA.
I just asked Mr. if I could say something. I want to say something real quick. When I moved to Orange County, there was nobody, so Natalie and Roseanne told me I better start a meeting. So I started a meeting. Now we have a meeting every night. And it is unbelievable because when I first went there, there was this little women meeting from another program. And the woman told me, you cannot start a meeting because nobody out here goes out at night. That's what she said. And I didn't know there was a Costa Mesa where my dear friend Nancy was. All I knew was I was in South Laguna Niguel, and there was no meetings except this daytime meeting. And I actually believed her, so it took me 7 months. And all of a sudden, I have to tell you guys, it's packed at all the night meetings. And I assume that 100-pound meeting has like 65 people in it, and all the speakers come from everywhere. And you know what? I don't listen to other people that they say to me anymore. And so that community now goes to L.A., to San Diego. We get speakers from Santa Barbara. It's amazing. When I started to feel strong about me, you know, myself, and reached out to others, everybody came. And that's, I didn't have any self-confidence enough, even in my 10th year, and listening to a person, two people saying, we don't go out at night. Nobody's going to go to those meetings. Why are you starting a meeting at night? It's like my character defect of not doing enough was still there in my 10th year. So it's just like those walls start to crumble, and I started to build up my self-esteem and self-worth. And what I want to share with you guys is, it takes a long time. And sometimes I still have that part of me, that little Rosie in me, that doesn't feel good about herself sometimes. And it takes me a few days to speak up to people. Now I get to speak up right away when my feelings get hurt. I wait a day though. Because I have to pray about it, how to do it in a loving way, and then say, can we have a talk? You know? And it's just amazing how we get to learn from our experience. And it's a miracle. It's all a miracle how to grow up. I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever grow up really entirely. Thanks.
Okay, we have one more question, and we have 2 minutes before we have to start the wrap-up. So the question is, what can be done to encourage fellows to do service and follow through on commitments?
Hi, I'm Victor Compulsive Overeater. Someone asked me about 3 months ago when they were having openings on the board of LA Intergroup, wouldn't you like to do so-and-so? And I kind of thought, no, I really don't want to do that. But the truth of the matter is that our lives really are full. If yours is all like mine, there's a lot of things to do. And the important part of all of this is to remind myself that without service, I have a tendency to isolate. And I will stay on doing things just on my own and get in my own head and make bad choices. So looking back about 2.5 months ago, I'm grateful that person asked me, because then somebody did ask me afterwards if I would do something, and so I am now the treasurer of the board. And the reason I say that is that the best thing that I can ever say is that if to do anything, to encourage anybody, to have them do something to be of service, the first thing I do is I have to do it by example. I have to be doing it by myself. I can't tell somebody, hey, why don't you go up, you know, and take care of that if I'm not doing anything on my own. The other thing I will say, and I've heard this from board members, and I've heard this from other people in other positions, that it truly is, being of service is really its own reward. And if somebody wants to get involved by sharing their program with others, even if it's just picking up the cups after the meeting, even if it's just moving the chairs and setting them up or putting them away, just greeting, being available, it gets me out of myself. And I know that when you're showing or telling other people that they should be of service too in some fashion, remind them that this is not just for them to go out and have extra work in their lives, but it's for them to be able to pursue their program and to be able to give back things that have been given to them. Because without all those people who were of service all of these years before, including going all the way back to about 1935, if I remember correctly, when AA was originally started, if these people had not been selfless at some point, there would be no OA today. Now, I'm not quite as adventuresome as some of the people in the big book. I don't house people in my house and take care of them if they're having an eating binge by, you know, having them, you know, take care of their business in my living room. But I can, in my own small ways, be of service by doing things, whatever it may be, as much as I can, as many times, if whenever possible, when I'm asked. So if you've had experience with service, please share what you've gotten out of it with other people when you ask them to be of service. So that's my experience. Thank you.
Thank all three of you for speaking. So if you wish to, please stand where you are, join hands, and join me in a third step prayer. Mm-hmm. Don't grope each other, just join hands. It's a group hug. God, grant me the serenity of tears, the things I
Thank you. Me too.